this weekend. Join Vision CEO Phil Edwards for Sunday Morning Together. Each week, Phil is joined by pastors from across Australia as they minister to us all. Communion, conversation, encouragement, and a smorgasbord of great songs help us focus on God's character and promises. Sunday Morning Together with Phil Edwards on Vision and on demand every Sunday in the free Vision Christian Media app.
realfaith.org.au. One day, she was leaving work and I'm like, "Good night, Rosie." And she said, "Hey, I just want you to know I'm praying for you." And I said, "Wow." And she goes, "I want you to know something else. I love you." And those words broke through the hardness of my heart like nothing else could. And I began to weep. I cried and I hid my head under a counter because I didn't want her to see me crying. I didn't even know why I was crying, really. But something touched me so deeply and I thought, I don't know what she's got, but I have to have it.
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, before we begin today, I just want to let parents know that due to the subject matter being discussed regarding sexuality and sexual identity, today's program is not recommended for young listeners. As we'll hear, Tom grew up in the United States and struggled with his identity and same-sex attraction. Meanwhile, Donna grew up in a highly dysfunctional home and also struggled with same-sex attraction. Now, they have been married for over 30 years and have four adult children, with one married and living here in Australia. Today, Tom and Donna Colt will share their unique story with us. Tom and Donna, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you
for having
us. So
good to be here.
Glad to have you with us. And one of the reasons why you're even here in Australia is you're visiting your son who lives on the east side of Melbourne.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
He actually was, we were all missionaries and he was a missionary and met an Aussie girl and they fell in love and were married and they were missionaries in Amsterdam for 2 years. And then they ended up moving back to her family here in Melbourne. So,
and that's so wonderful because it's right here on the east side of Melbourne.
Yeah,
near the studio. So he brought you over here today.
Yeah, we were only 10 minutes away.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And I should say you're originally from where in the United States?
Michigan, Detroit area of Michigan. Mm-hmm. Originally, both of us grew up there.
Both of us.
Okay. Yeah. And now you're currently living in North Carolina?
South Carolina. Greenville, South Carolina.
I was close.
Yep, you're close. We're neighbors.
That's right.
Yep.
Okay. And as we heard in the introduction, both of you struggled with same-sex attraction in your teen years growing up. So we'll start with you, Tom. Please share with us, what was your life like growing up?
So I always say I grew up in just a real typical all-American dysfunctional family. So it wasn't dramatic. You'll hear Donna's story, very much more dramatic, violent home, you know, things like that. It wasn't like that. It was a quiet dysfunction. My father was an alcoholic, son of an alcoholic. So there were just, you know, things that you didn't talk about. Mm. And you learn in alcoholic homes not to mention those kind of things. So it was just a very quiet dysfunction. I was the third son and hope for daughter in a family of six. So my mom...
They wanted you to be a daughter.
Oh, yeah. My mom told me growing up all the time, if I would have been a girl, my name would have been Debbie. So I knew that from a very early age, and it didn't help that I had big brown eyes with rosy cheeks and long eyelashes, you know. So my mom would say, you would have made a pretty girl. And actually, other women would say, neighbors, and, oh, he would make such a pretty girl. So that doesn't solidify in a young boy growing up a strong masculine image. So,
yeah.
So I was very aware of that my mom was slightly disappointed that I wasn't a girl. She didn't have a name picked out for me. And I was a very emotional little boy. So I cried all the time. And my dad's kind of a man's man, very stoic, didn't really show a lot of emotion. He was a Korean War vet. His father was a World War I vet. So they were pretty stoic and unemotional. And I was so emotional. I cried when I was happy. I cried when I was sad. And really,
not commercials, did you?
Yeah, all commercials. I remember Born Free, the movie.
Oh yeah,
Elsa
yeah.
the Lion. Yeah. And I was just a little boy, and I'm sitting there watching it, tears just pouring down my face, and realizing nobody else in the room was crying. So you know, you just feel kind of out of place, and I didn't fit in with the other boys.
They
weren't crying at Born Free, and I was. I also remember I had we went to a resale shop, and I was probably 4 years old, and I really wanted a doll. And I remember my dad getting very angry. He will not get a doll. You know, he was very certain of that, and I didn't get the doll.
He wanted to give you a hammer,
or a truck, or something like that. But no, he was very upset about that, and I remember that. And so it was a sense that I was a disappointment to him.
And what was your relationship like with your father in general?
In general, there wasn't much of one. I feared him because he would get very frustrated. He was gone a lot. You know, he worked, and then when he was home, he was very much not emotionally connected. Like, I have very strong memories of childhood. Mm-hmm. I remember my house when I was 2 years old. So I have clear memories, and I don't remember hugging me, kissing me, telling me he loved me. Mostly I remember he corrected us. It was kind of, back then, wait till your father gets home. You know, the dad was the disciplinarian. Yeah, yeah. So I viewed my father that way. That he was the disciplinarian.
And your relationship with your mother?
She was very protective, overprotective with me, I would say, because I was very emotional and sensitive. Kind of the smothering mother, you could kind of say. She was very tender, and I remember lots of love from her, nurture, hugs and kisses, those kind of things. But there was that sense of overprotecting me.
Okay, and then when you entered your teen years, when all the other boys were starting to get interested in girls?
Yeah, I found that I was not. In fact, I remember Charlie's Angels was a really big thing in the U.S. back
70s,
then.
Yep.
And Farrah Fawcett was the heartthrob of every little boy. And I, we had a poster in our room. I shared a room with three other brothers, and a poster of Farrah Fawcett. And I looked at it and goes, that's not doing it for me. In fact, James Caan was really big back then too, and I found myself attracted to the posters of James Caan, and I thought, oh no, something's terribly wrong. I attributed back then, I mean, I had been sexually abused at the age of 4 and then again at the age of 8 by older boys. One was an 18-year-old. And so that, I believe that helped solidify the confusion in my life. But as I entered into puberty, I was very aware that I wasn't attracted to girls or women. I was attracted actually to men. It wasn't boys my own age. It was more men in Hollywood and men out and about. So at the age of 13, I entered into a physical relationship with another boy in our neighborhood, and we were active together for the next 6 years. So it wasn't a romantic relationship by any means, but it was the 70s. There were no gay clubs back then in high school. I said the only club was a baseball bat, and they would beat you with it if they found out that you were gay. So everyone was closeted in high school. So I very much stayed hidden and as invisible as possible so that I wouldn't get beat up or harassed. Then I went to college, and at 19, met my first openly gay person in a vocal jazz singing group that I was in. And he introduced me to the gay life in Detroit, the gay community. And I jumped in with both feet. I said, this is who I am. They told me I was born that way. It felt that way to me because I felt different from as far back as I could think. And I jumped in, and I didn't have any kind of moral principle to keep me from doing that. I wasn't.
I was going to say, were you raised a certain way?
No. My mom was Catholic, nominal Catholic, as many people in the North were at that time. But we really weren't raised in the church. My father was an atheist and very clear that he didn't believe in God, and very humanistic in his mindset. And so I kind of adopted his mindset, and I really felt like there really wasn't a God, that it was all kind of a cosmic accident. So as I entered more into the gay world and the gay life, I was very active in the gay community. I began to feel very empty, and it felt shallow to me. I thought this would finally fulfill that deep longing in my heart, and mm-hmm. it didn't.
So here you thought, finally, I'm finding people who I can identify with. I'm yeah. home.
Yeah.
But yet, it didn't satisfy.
No, I still felt incredibly empty. And so I started looking into Buddhism and Hinduism and New Age thinking. I was doing transcendental meditation and astral projection, all this kind of New Agey stuff. And I believe, really, I was in a seeking place. I really was seeking for that something more. Mm-hmm. You know, Scripture says He's placed eternity in men's hearts. And mm-hmm. I believed, I knew that there was something more, and I was looking for it. So that's why I love all the New Age hippie people, because I really do think many of them are seeking just as I was, yeah. you know. Yeah. And but it didn't, again, satisfy mm-hmm. the deep longing of my heart. At that time, I worked at a restaurant that was like a chain of restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going to work at the one that nobody wanted to work at. And there was a woman there named Rosie. She was a waitress. I was a cook. And in that world, cooks hate waitresses. Waitresses hate cooks.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's just the way it is. There's a kind of mutual animosity between the two. But all the cooks like Rosie because she was the kindest, sweetest lady. Mm. She was very wonderful. It was in a very predominantly Italian Catholic area. Mm. And so she was short and kind of olive complected. So I just assumed she was a Christian. So I assumed she was Italian and Catholic. Turns out she was Lebanese and Pentecostal. So I
got just off a little bit. There.
Off a little bit. And she would say strange things like, praise the Lord. And
you had never heard anybody
say that. Never heard that kind of stuff. I didn't really, I was a waiter as well as a cook at this restaurant. And
So did you not like yourself?
yeah, exactly. But I did like Christians. I did not like them because they were kind of demanding and left lousy tips with tracks that told you were going to hell.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I wasn't a fan, but there was something different about Rosie, and it was that kindness. Looking back on it, I realized then I was a homosexual, partying, vulgar mouth, New Agey, strange guy, yet she never pointed out my sin. She always just loved on me. And I didn't realize that until much later. Like, maybe a year later after I ended up becoming a Christian, I realized she never once pointed out my sin. She just showed me love.
And talked about Jesus.
Yeah, she did. She shared Christ very much so. And so I was drawn to her. And then one day, she was leaving work, and I'm like, good night, Rosie. And she said, hey, I just want you to know I'm praying for you. And I thought that was very odd since she didn't really know me. And I said, you pray for me? And she said, I pray for you every night. My husband and I pray for you. And I said, wow. And she goes, I want you to know something else. I love you. And those words broke through the hardness of my heart like nothing else could. And I began to weep. I cried. And I hid my head under a counter because I didn't want her to see me crying. I didn't even know why I was crying, really. But something touched me so deeply. And I thought, I don't know what she's got, but I have to have it.
Our guests today are Tom and Donna Cole, who are sharing their life journeys with us. So far, we've mostly been hearing from Tom, who's been telling us about his background and his struggles with his identity and same-sex attraction. Next, we'll hear how Tom becomes a Christian, and then it's Donna's turn to share her story. All that and more is coming up when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources, and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and my guests today are Tom and Donna Cole, who are sharing their unique story with us. As we heard before the break, Tom grew up struggling with his identity and same-sex attraction. One day, as a young adult, he met a kind lady at his work named Rosie, who he knew was a Christian and had made a big impression on him. Tom knew he wanted what she had. Now we're going to hear what happened next in Tom's life.
So I invited myself to church with her the following Sunday.
What did she think when you said, yeah, I want to go to church?
Oh, she said she was elated. She couldn't believe that I was saying this. And she said, well, we'll pick you up. You know, she wasn't going to take any chance I didn't show up. So her and her family picked me up in their station wagon and we went to church. And at the end of the service, they gave an invitation to accept Christ. And I went forward. And I remember that day like it was yesterday, and the song that was playing, and I wept and I cried, and the words were, I long to be the bride that you're returning for, dressed in garments white and wrinkle free. And I just wept, and I walked outside and the sky was bluer and the grass was greener, and like I knew I was different.
Yeah,
I knew I was changed.
Yeah,
I would like to say that in that moment all my same-sex attractions were gone, but they were not. And didn't really know what to do with that. I remember reading the scriptures early on. I never heard a sermon that it was wrong at that point. But something deep down inside knew it, that this was not what God intended for my life. Mm. And I read 1 Corinthians chapter 6. It says, know you not that such will not inherit the kingdom of heaven, no drunkards, nor liars, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, and shall inherit the kingdom. I thought, man, I got 4 out of 5. This is not good news. But you got to keep reading. And I kept reading, thank goodness. And it said, and such were some of you, but you were washed and sanctified by the blood of his son. And I thought, okay, there were gay people in Corinth, and they changed. And something in my heart came alive and said, this is a possibility for me. And so that started the journey of really just seeking God's will for my life and for my sexuality. And actually a big burly dude that I went to church with came up to me one day and put his arm around my shoulder and said, hey, how can I pray for you? And I'm like, you really want to know? And he's like, yeah, that's why I asked. And I said, well, I came out of homosexuality and I still struggle with those feelings. And he goes, well, I don't know anything about that, but I struggle with lust. It can't be that different, can it? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess. And he goes, all right, I'll pray for you. You pray for me.
Wow, just really sincere.
Yeah, very sincere. And he was. And he really did pray for me. And I really did pray for him. And I thought, man, if this works with him, I'll just tell everybody. And I did. I started sharing with anybody who would listen where I was struggling. If they asked for prayer, if a prayer request for me. And I said, yeah, this is where I struggle. And I found my greatest healing was not in a program or a book, but it really was in relationship, and especially relationship with other men. Yeah, and then I went to a prayer meeting, and at that prayer meeting, I met a young woman named Donna.
Oh.
Hello.
Does that just happen to be Donna who's sitting over here?
It just happens to be that very same woman. Yeah, a very different woman at that time, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as we heard in the introduction, both of you struggled with same-sex attraction in your teen years, in your young adult years. So, Donna, let's hear your story.
Well, one thing that we always say is that you do feel born that way. A lot of people do. We did. So I always have such compassion for people that struggle in this area, especially when we have a culture that tells us all that is true and it feels so true. So for me, I was raised in a family of all girls. We didn't have any brothers. And my father was a real man's man. So he wanted everything done at a certain time. He was very controlling. And he also was very abusive to my mom and to us. And so we had a very orderly life. The house better be clean. My mom better have the dinner on at a certain time, and if those things weren't done, we knew Dad was going to explode, and never knew when he was going to. And so the first pregnancy my mom had was my older sister, and then 3 years later she was pregnant again, and that time it better be a boy because he so wanted a boy and never had one. So when I was born, somehow a child will pick up on those things. It might never have been said. Like, it wasn't as boisterous as with Tom, where mm-hmm. it's, where my parents said, oh, you know, we wanted a boy. Your name would have been this. All I know is from very early on, I wished my name was Charlie. I was more like the firstborn son of our family than ever a daughter. I went out and changed oil with my dad, or when my sisters, there was another daughter born after me. So they would get girl toys. I would get boy toys for Christmas or my birthday. And that didn't bother me because I love trucks. And I
was going to say, changing oil. How did you feel about it?
Oh, didn't bother. I loved my dad. So I wanted to be near my dad. My mom was such a girly girl, and I was nothing like that. She loved clothes and makeup and all those.
So you were more of a tomboy anyway.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't like you were being pushed into a square when you were a circle or something like that.
No.
Okay.
And I believe God made me that way, but I also believe that little girl picked up that they wanted a boy. And I believe at a very early age, I pushed aside my femininity, and a child will become what their parents want because they so long for love.
The affirmation.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, at that young age, I didn't understand all that. But after I came to know the Lord, he started to heal some of the wounds in my heart. And as he started to heal those things, I started to put the puzzle pieces together on why at such an early age, I thought I was born attracted towards women. But really, it was a deep void in my heart and a longing for another woman's arms to embrace me, to love me. And we also learned that Tom took some counseling classes, and that only 30% of women are thinkers and 70% are feelers, and vice versa in the male world.
So if I'm understanding you right, you're more cerebral.
Yes.
So you're more of a thinker and not, well, kind of like what Tom shared, where he's more of a feeler and crying at Born Free and commercials.
Yes, and so men, in the men's world, 30% are feelers and 70% are thinkers.
So you guys are just the flip of what is typical in society about 75% of the time.
Right, and I mean, and what that causes is you feel like you don't fit in, and you honestly don't. You really are different than the vast majority of the others.
Yeah, so it solidifies what you already are thinking about yourself, that I'm really not a girl, I'm more like a boy, but that is absolutely not true. And just like we always talk about that when we get married, we realized I am nothing like a man and he's nothing like a woman, even though I'm a thinker. So,
because there are a number of tomboys who get married and have heterosexual relationships.
Yes. But if you add in all the other things, I believe it solidifies this lie that I believed that I was more like a boy and also that I was gay, homosexual. So then, so my mom divorced my father when I was 8 years old, and she decided to live a life she never got to live because my mom was born in an abusive family. My grandfather was abusive to the kids and to my grandmother. Then my mom married into that same kind of thing, because when you're really not healed, what seems familiar to you is comfortable, even if you don't realize you're doing that. And so my mom married my dad at 18, right out of high school. He was a little older than her, and she also, you know, was in that abusive relationship. So then when they divorced, when they were married for 13 years, they were divorced. Then my mom decided she'd live a life she never got to live, and she just started going out, partying. The three of us lived with my mom. The truth is we were afraid of our father, so we lived with her. But right away, she got another man into our lives, and she didn't marry him right away. But if my dad was abusive, this man was 10 times more abusive than my father ever was.
Oh, wow.
And so the fear of men and the walls that I started to build around my heart became harder, even though, again, at the time, I didn't understand all that. And so my stepfather, in the end, murdered two people. So he's in prison for that. So
wow.
He was that abusive. Then came the next stepfather the last one was around 2 or 3 years. All the stepfathers were around 2 or 3 years. My mom had a child with each of those stepfathers, but by the time that baby was birthed, they were moved on from our lives. So the next stepfather was not abusive like the other two physically, but he did start to molest me and my sisters. So again, that is destroying who you are in your personhood and in your identity.
You're very confused.
Yes. And so then he was around 2 or 3 years. Then he left. And then after that, my mom just never married again, just had men, you know, live with us. Mm. And so all this is shaping who I am and solidifying my brokenness. And then at age 18, I never dated male or female, but at age 18, I started working in this area, and this man who was about 10 years older than me asked me out. And at this time, that was the first time I ever went one way or the other with someone. And we were all just drinking and having good time. And I don't know what he put in my drink, but he put something in there. And the next morning I woke up and I was with him, and I thought, what is going on? And then for about 3 months we dated, and I realized, oh, I cannot receive from a man. That's when I really understood that I absolutely am born gay. And so at the same time, I was hanging around all my coworkers. Many of them were gay, and I started just going that way. And my one best friend, I gave my heart to her and, you know, broke up with that man and told my mom that I'm born this way. There's nothing I can do about it. And I went headlong into a homosexual life for 4 years.
Okay, we're going to stop it right there because, unfortunately, we've run out of time for this first part of our conversation. So, Tom and Donna, can we invite you to join us again next time to share more of your story?
We'd be glad to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that was part one of my conversation with Tom and Donna Cole. As we've been hearing, Donna's painting a pretty bleak picture of what her home life was like growing up, filled with one dysfunctional stepdad after another. Next time, we'll hear how Donna eventually becomes a Christian before meeting and marrying Tom. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but if you want to learn more about what Tom and Donna are doing now, you can go to their website, pureheart.rest. That's pureheart.rest. We're going to hear more of Tom and Donna Cole's story next time right here on Real Faith.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au.
Real Faith is a production of Vision Christian Media.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.